Welcome to Victory Over Communism with Bill Gertz, the only program willing to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. Your host and guide to victory over communism is one of the nation's most experienced national security journalists, Bill Gertz, who uses unique facts, pinpoint analysis, and exclusive interviews to identify and counter today's destructive communist ideologies. Now, Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.
Welcome to the podcast. This is the second year of the Victory Over Communism program, and I'm continuing to refine its content. As I like to point out in the beginning, the podcast is about ideology, communist and Marxist ideology. I alternate topics each program between Chinese communism and American Marxism. The program is not about people. All people are free to believe in what they wish. The goal of the VOC podcast is education. I'm working to educate Americans and the people of the world about these two false ideologies that have caused untold suffering and human privation since the first promulgated by Karl Marx in the late 1800s and then ruthlessly implemented by Vladimir Lenin in Russia beginning in 1917. Unfortunately, communism did not end with the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. In fact, it's being revived and promoted globally by the Chinese Communist Party, which I'm calling the new focus of evil in the modern world. That's what Ronald Reagan called the Soviet communism in a March 1983 speech, the focus of evil in the modern world. He not only spoke out about this evil, he did something about it. As I detail in my latest book, Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy, Reagan and his key White House aides understood the strategic vulnerabilities of Soviet communism and launched an ambitious program to bring down what was then an evil empire. Today, the new emerging evil empire is the Chinese Communist Party that has ruled China's people with an iron fist since seizing power in 1949. For 20 years, China's leader Mao Zedong wreaked havoc on China, exterminating tens of millions of people through forced collectivization, mass executions, prison labor camps, and a government-produced famine. Things began to change in the late 70s as a result of a power struggle between communist factions with Mao's wife and three comrades, the so-called Gang of Four. They wanted to continue Mao's murderous communist policies after his death in 1976. Out of the mass death and chaos of the Cultural Revolution around that time, emerged Deng Xiaoping, a dedicated communist who was able to seize power from the Maoists. Once in charge, he then reoriented the CCP with an eye toward reformist, i.e. capitalist economic policies, that ran directly counter to Mao's Marxism-Leninism with Chinese characteristics. Deng advocated a return to normalcy with party ideology submerged deep within the propaganda system. It remained the guiding power behind the party, but was put on a kind of hold until China could recover its power from Mao's devastating rule. But it is important to be very clear that there was never any change in the state ideology. Every leader from Mao onward has proclaimed the CCP as firmly committed to pursuing what communists falsely claim is the universal truth of Marxism-Leninism. Communists believe history is marching toward a new world of the workers' paradise, an ideal, as I've laid out in the VOC podcast, that will never be realized because its basic assumptions about people and history are false. China made great strides under Deng's communism, becoming the world's second biggest economy after that of the United States. Unfortunately, the deception of Chinese communism under Deng Xiaoping fooled many in the United States and the West into thinking it was somehow leading away from Marxism-Leninism toward a more open, free market and democratic system. This failure to understand Chinese communism will be viewed by future historians as a strategic error of massive proportions. Today, Chinese communist ideology is no longer hiding in the shadows in China. It has been moved front and center by hardline Marxist-Leninist Xi Jinping. Yet too many in the West having invested so much in the Deng years and the false hope of a politically reformed China, continue to act as if on autopilot in pursuit of engagement with this focus of evil in the modern world. Beginning earlier this year, Xi Jinping began adopting the strategy and tactics of Mao Zedong's crisis playbook. He launched multiple ideological indoctrination drives throughout the nation. The drives, in reality, are part of an effort to quell mounting unrest to Chinese communism and Xi's neo-Maoist policies, such as the disastrous zero-COVID policy, his destruction of democracy in Hong Kong, his crackdown on non-state businesses, and growing tensions with the United States. Recent months have seen a mass study campaign designed to promote his personal brand of communism that differs slightly from in name from that of Mao. Xi Jinping calls his ideology Marxism-Leninism with Chinese characteristics for a new era. The sole difference from Mao's version is the addition of the phrase for a new era. In reality, the new era is Xi's unchallenged rule over the CCP that achieved unchecked power not seen since Mao initiated his personality cult that only ended with his death in 1976. The new personality cult is equally steeped in Marxist-Leninist ideology that is being force-fed to the Chinese people in schools, hospitals, banks, courts, police stations, and military bases. Communism, in reality, is a false religion. It is not based on facts or truth, but Marxist-Leninist concepts and belief. Xi went so far as to label the latest party mass campaign as a new, quote, spiritual baptism needed for all 94 million members of the Chinese Communist Party. Xi believes the Deng retrenchment of communism in favor of capitalism, one of Deng's buzz phrases at the time was to get rich is glorious, had weakened the appeal of Marxism-Leninism and undermined CCP rule as a result. Now, under Xi, a new drive to rejuvenate the nation is underway. As Xi told officials in April 2023, the entire party must unify its thinking, unify its will, and unify its actions. A new ideological indoctrination campaign is directed by Xi at every level. It calls for close-up investigation and research. As the Wall Street Journal's Cheng Wan Huang reported, that phrase is a direct echo of Mao's campaign in the early 60s in the aftermath of the Great Leap Forward and to shift blame for those massive failures. Mao's Great Leap was a disastrous effort to try and rapidly modernize China. From 58 to 1962, the entire nation was ordered to produce steel, including in makeshift backyard furnaces. The results caused massive food shortages and one of China's worst famines. Estimate of the death toll range from 30 million to 40 million people. In the aftermath of the zero COVID, which caused widespread food shortages and began to tank the once vibrant Chinese economy, Xi is now conducting a new ideological campaign to try and cover up his failures and gain control over public narratives that will be used to hide the failings. Behind the propaganda extolling the great leader that runs daily in all state media, Xi is in reality not in a strong position. That was made clear in November when extremely rare nationwide protests broke out against draconian COVID lockdowns. Signs appeared denouncing Xi Jinping and the widely despised CCP. The growing totalitarian impulse is forcing many well-heeled in China to flee the country. Thousands are landing in California after having carefully moved money out of China and into U.S. banks. We're even seeing mass migration flows through the border, through the southern U.S. border. The latest ideological indoctrination campaign by Xi is calling for investigation and research, includes sending party officials out into the field on fact-finding missions. The goal is to improve CCP and government policies. The campaign calls for seeking truth from facts, a canard since the CCP policymaking determines truth from a collective dictatorship led by Xi called the Standing Committee of the Politburo. It contains anywhere from 7 to 8 members, and the Politburo is a larger body, which is roughly 25 or so officials. Truth to the CCP is whatever the Politburo says, and whatever the Politburo says is what Xi Jinping wants it to say. There can be no deviation whatsoever from party orthodoxy. This is built on the concept known as democratic centralism. It's a kind of circular reasoning that has no basis in true concepts of Western democracy. Democratic centralism, according to Chinese state media CGTN in 2017, is the leadership principle of the Chinese Communist Party. Quote, "The fundamental system of the party is democratic centralism, which emphasizes both democracy and centralism. We pursue the goal of combining the two systems together, which neither overstresses democracy to suppress centralism, nor the other way around," said Li Junru, former vice president of the Central Party School. In reality, this is a false, as democracy calls for government by the entire population. Democratic centralism, by contrast, requires party members to hold divergent opinions to keep the differences to themselves and obey the party's decision and action. Within the leading group, democratic centralism is embodied through collective leadership and collective decision-making. Every member of the leadership has his or her right to express opinions, but the final decision will be accord the consensus reached by the group. Individuals can keep their opinions to themselves, but have to honor the collective decision. That's, again, from Li Junru. Thus, democratic centralism is falsely called democratic, and it's kind of a catch-22, a policy whose effect is the opposite of what is intended. Xi's directive on research and investigation urged officials to study broad areas that he has demanded action. They include economic security, environmental protection, and efforts to shape a more egalitarian China through, quote, common prosperity. Xi's directive directly echoed Mao's 1961 campaign calling on cadres to investigate and research problems, which he launched during the Great Famine that resulted from his radical plans to rapidly industrialize China. Mao used investigation and research as a vehicle for rectifying policy errors and shielding himself from criticism, as the campaign implied that lower-level officials were poorly informed about mass deaths and starvations on the ground, and therefore they were at fault for misgovernance. Without investigation, one has no right to speak. Without investigation, one has no authority to make decisions. Xi was quoted as saying in a March directive setting up the new mass campaign. Xi was invoking a Mao slogan, and state propaganda noted that since his days as a local and regional administrator, he frequently toured grassroots locations to hear directly from ordinary people. Analysts say the similarities between Xi's and Mao's investigation and research campaign are clear signs Xi is at fault and must try to remedy his errors. Campaign is not expected to alter the disenchantment felt in wide segments of Chinese society, including among urban professionals, intellectuals, and even within the military. Following the investigation and research mass campaign, Xi launched a second program called Themed Education. This was aimed at spreading the so-called Xi Jinping thought into party members. The second campaign involved 58 guidance teams sent throughout China to direct the study campaign. Xinhua, the state news agency, reported that by mid-April, all regional governments, about 120 central party and state agencies, and more than 70 major state companies and financial institutions had conducted programs promoting Xi Jinping thought. As part of the mass campaign, publishers produced new anthologies of Xi's speeches and were required reading and political textbooks. Shades of Mao's infamous Little Red Book that were waved by party zealots during the Cultural Revolution. Books are not the only vehicles used in the ideological indoctrination. Cultural performances and poetry readings were held at state companies and universities promoting Xi's brand of communism. In Harbin, in northeast China, one Saturday in May, they included keeping marriage registries open in what state media called a way to honor Xi's variant of communism. The mass communist campaign also included visits to revolutionary sites in China, where party members joined together to recite the Communist Party admission oath that all members swear upon joining. The oath states, "It is my will to join the Communist Party of China, uphold the party's program, observe the provisions of the party constitution, fulfill a party membership's duty, carry out the party's decisions, strictly observe party discipline, guard party secrets, be loyal to the party, work hard, fight for communism throughout my life, be ready at all times to sacrifice my will for the party and the people, and never betray the party." That's the initiation oath. The communist indoctrination campaign is not expected to energize the party faithful. And for China's population at large, the truth of communism has been plain to see for decades. It is little more than a false ideology that has enriched and empowered the party, but done little to promote the nation and its people. Chinese communist mass campaigns under Xi may not be as deadly as those of the Great Leap or the Cultural Revolution and the Zero COVID campaign that resulted in deaths of millions or thousands. However, they force people into living lies, and unless those lies are repeated, state violence ensues. Imprisonment, torture, death are the most common features of anyone in China who refuses to abide by CCP lies and deception. As the great Russian writer and anti-communist Alexander Solzhenitsyn put it in a 1974 essay, "Live Not by Lies," the Chinese people must not participate in the lies of Chinese communism. The simplest and most accessible key to our liberation, Solzhenitsyn said, is a personal non-participation in lies. Even if all is covered by lies, even if all is under their rule, let us resist in the smallest way. Let their rule hold not through me. This does not require shouting the truth in public or online, but it does require everyone to refuse to say what they do not think or believe. Like the courageous tank man who stood in front of a line of tanks outside Tiananmen Square, who was willing to be run over on the basis of his beliefs, the Chinese need to overcome temerity and no longer remain witting servants of lies. Solzhenitsyn's resistance to lies calls on everyone under communist rule to declare openly that they will not write, sign, or publish in any way a single line distorting, so far as one can see it, the truth. He listed a whole bunch of reasons that people should just resist lying. These are the important steps that all people can take to resist the lies of communism. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
Hi, this is Bill Gertz. I wanted to talk to you briefly about my latest book. It's called Deceiving the Sky: Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. This is the most important book you can read to fully understand the threat posed by the Chinese Communist government. I urge you to get a copy today. It can be found at my website, The Gertz File, that's gertzfile.com, or at the book site called deceivingthesky.com.
If you enjoy listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, please consider helping Bill with his important work of educating patriots just like you about how communism is very real and even more dangerous than ever before. Your donation to the Victory Over Communism program will help expand its reach across America and throughout the world. In fact, you'll be helping to provide the kind of information that may well make its way behind the new Iron Curtain and the Great Firewall of China and inspire those living under communism to seek freedom. Supporting the Victory Over Communism program is easy. Just visit the program website, victoryovercommunism.net, and click on the link at the bottom to gofundme.com. Again, Just visit victoryovercommunism.net and click on the link to GoFundMe.com. Thanks for listening, and God bless America.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. This is the counterproposal section of the podcast, what I call the spiritual portion of the program. The VOC podcast uses a critique and counterproposal format in addressing the problem of Chinese communism and American Marxism. I first present a critique followed by a counterproposal. The counterproposal is based on the teachings of the late Reverend Sun Myung-moon, who produced the Divine Principle, a new truth based on the Bible. It provides a new and deeper understanding of God, humankind, and the basis for the current problems in the world, and how God has been working clearly throughout history to restore humankind back to God. The VOC worldview is derived from these teachings and provides a powerful exposition of truth that, when contrasted with Marxism-Leninism, provides a powerful counterweight to that false ideology. The VOC worldview also offers a true hope of ultimately solving the problems that communism advocates solving, but will never do so because of its inherent atheism. In this episode, I'll discuss the process of change in people, society, and the world through a God-centered ideology. The process of change within human beings with the understanding of a new expression of truth. Truth is eternal and unchanging. Nevertheless, the expression of truth that humans of a given age are able to understand is constantly changing. Recognizing this, the VOC worldview starts with a new and clear expression of truth. This expression of truth is able to improve our understanding of God and the relationship of God to humankind. St. Paul predicted that as time went on, we would no longer see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. That's in 1 Corinthians 13:12. The VOC worldview is a God-centered ideology whose time has come. Certainly, with the advances which humanity has made in all realms of knowledge and understanding, it's appropriate at this time that God would inspire us to formulate clearly our God-affirming principles into a coherent, inspiring, and convincing worldview. This is the purpose of the VOC worldview. The new understanding of God produced by this new expression of truth is able to quickly elevate the individual's perspective or point of view. I call this a spiritual awakening. This process takes the age-old blindfold from our eyes and allows us to see the whole reality. There are basically two kinds of values, material and spiritual values. Material values are temporal, while spiritual values are eternal. God created both values to be good, and they are essential to human well-being. It is important to realize, however, that material values are secondary, while spiritual values are primary. At the present time, there is confusion regarding the importance of spiritual values. The spiritual awakening the VOC worldview kindles will bring about a change and clarification of the priority of values. At this point, I'll ask, what is the greatest obstacle to preventing this process from happening? In other words, what is the worst enemy of humankind? We have been saying all along that the worst enemy of God and humankind is communism. At this point, we should make clear that communism itself is only a manifestation of the fundamental human problem of evil. Communism is the external enemy of humans, while selfishness is the internal enemy. If tomorrow morning all communists in the world renounced Marxism-Leninism as a false dogma, would there be all heaven and all happiness? Sadly, it would not be the case. Each of us would still have to win the internal battle against selfishness. A quiet yet intense revolution from selfishness to unselfishness needs to take place within the human heart. This is the revolution of humankind. So, what is selfishness? Selfishness does not refer to the natural desire of everyone to become a better person. Each of us has a natural ambition to secure greater well-being and a drive to achieve higher values. This is not selfishness. These are all aspects of the God-given original nature of humans. Selfishness refers to the narrow misapplication of human desire or ambition. This narrowness gives rise to greed, jealousy, and vanity, and these are poison to the spiritual life of humans. Selfishness is a perversion of humans' original nature. It comes from blindness towards spiritual realities. Life presents us with an endless series of choices, and blindness to spiritual realities leads people to make the wrong choices. Selfishness can be compared to going shopping and making the wrong choice because of a lack of information. You feel cheated later when you find out the truth. Whoever lives a selfish life will feel cheated after death when they realize what a bad choice they've made. This is the result of a blindness to spiritual reality. Selfishness is like a drug, and drug abuse is a serious problem in the U.S. and other Western countries. Drug abuse is like selfishness. Illicit drugs produce an immediate artificial high, but in the process they cause permanent damage to mental and physical health. In the same way, people who are ignorant of spiritual reality and are seeking immediate material well-being frequently behave in a selfish way, often hurting and abusing others. Men and women cheat on their spouses. Children deceive their parents. People steal from each other and violate one another. In this way, they may enjoy some momentary pleasure or short-term material satisfaction or gain, but they suffer eternal spiritual harm. Unselfishness, on the other hand, may require postponement of immediate gratification, but the reward is always a deeper form of satisfaction. Ultimately, when everyone practices an unselfish lifestyle, life on earth becomes a time of greatest pleasure and joy, and life in the spiritual world is the continuation of that joy eternally. Material values and material well-being are not evil. Quite the contrary, these things are good things created by God. Material things, however, are best used as a means to spiritual satisfaction. After all, no one can take even one penny with them on his or her spiritual journey, eternal journey. The wise way of life, then, is to invest every material resource we have on earth for the sake of the spiritual well-being of oneself and all people. Communism is talking about creating the regenerated human or the new communist man, but this individual has never appeared in the communist world. The enlightened man or woman can only appear when one is touched by the truth of God, surely not by a change in the economic system. We all can become new men and women when, one, we are spiritually awakened to higher values, and two, we have new motivations and new goals in life. When we have clear and inspiring goals in life, we are filled with vitality and enthusiasm. In fact, the word enthusiasm comes from the Greek entheos, meaning God entered. Enthusiasm means God entered into humans. When God enters into humans, we have higher values, new vitality, and enthusiasm. Defeating communism is only an intermediate objective. Our final goal is to build a truly moral society. On that day, we will realize the age-old human dream, which is none other than the realization of the ideal of God. To achieve this, it is necessary that each one of us take seriously the call to sainthood, the task of building a society of saints. The following is a brief summary of what I've been presenting as the VOC worldview. Throughout these counterproposal sections, I have comparing and contrasting two worldviews, that is, the VOC worldview and communism. Let me review a few points that I've made. VOC advocates a change in humans, while communism advocates a change in the economic system. VOC advocates an internal revolution within the human being, the change from selfishness to unselfishness. Communism, by contrast, advocates an external and violent revolution in line with its ideological perspective. The VOC worldview aspires to deal directly with the fundamental moral corruption that pervades all systems. Communism deals only with the symptoms of these problems. The key to all of this is the individual. On the individual level, the deviation of humans from God began. Likewise, it is on this level where restoration must also begin. If individuals are changed, then naturally families will be changed, then communities, nations, and the entire world which these families live in will be transformed. As I've stressed throughout, the VOC worldview maintains that there is God. Communism, by contrast, postulates that there is not. VOC maintains that life is eternal. Communism states that man is a temporal being. VOC believes there are absolute values. Communism is based on relative values. VOC espouses cooperation in human relations centered upon love. Communism emphasizes the dialectic centered upon hatred. VOC recognizes there are many struggles in human life, but in essence, these are between good and evil, selfishness and unselfishness. Communism identifies the basic form of struggle as class struggle. Ultimately, it can all be reduced to a single belief. VOC maintains that there is a God, and communism denies this. Only one of these beliefs can be true. We find the answer in the living reality of God. The following are 5 points that provide a succinct expression of the VOC worldview. I regard these 5 points as broad enough to encompass the beliefs of all God-accepting people, as well as people of conscience. At the same time, these points are specific enough to exclude all communistic and atheistic ideas. If you can accept these 5 principles, or even one of them, I'd like you to work with me in promoting the VOC worldview. These are the 5 points. VOC feels our religious people and people of conscience, all religious people and people of conscience can accept and unite upon. I'm confident that a communist is not able to accept even one of these following principles, which represent the foundation of the VOC worldview. It maintains that 1, God is the creator. 2, humans are children of God. 3, humans are created free to love and take responsibility. 4, humans live an eternal life. And 5, selfless love is the supreme value. There are parallels between the VOC worldview and the beliefs of the American founding fathers, as I mentioned in the previous podcast. These 5 points run closely parallel to the principles affirmed by several hundred years of the founding fathers of several hundred years ago by the founding fathers. Dr. Cleon Skousen, founder of the National Center for Constitutional Studies and a leading expert on the U.S. Constitution, in his text 5,000 Year Leap, explains that the United States of America accomplished in little more than 100 years, which required thousands of years to bring about in other parts of the world. The reason, according to Dr. Skousen, is that the founding fathers placed a high priority on religion and moral values. This priority is very evident when you consider that the same Congress that approved the United States Constitution also passed the Northwest Ordinance of 1787. Article 3 of the ordinance states, "Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools, and the means of education shall forever be encouraged." The founding fathers believed that education should include not only the teaching of knowledge, but religion and morality as well. Today, however, public schools devote little effort to the education of moral values. Religious teaching in schools has often been replaced with secular humanist principles that are, in essence, atheistic, and we're seeing more and more of this. While many oppose the re-inclusion of religious principles in the American school curriculum because they do not want their children to be indoctrinated in the beliefs of a particular denomination, the fact is that the founding fathers set out from the beginning to make the teaching of religion a unifying cultural factor in education and to exclude any emphasis on any particular creed or doctrine. They sought a universal religious code that would be acceptable to people of all faiths. Benjamin Franklin offered one expression of this universal code when he expressed the following articles of faith. Quote, "Here is my creed. I believe in one God, the creator of the universe, that he governs it by his providence, that he ought to be worshipped, that the most acceptable service we render to him is in doing good to his other children, that the soul of man is immortal and will be treated with justice in another life, respecting its conduct in this. These I take to be the fundamental points in all sound religion." So, summarizing this, there are five key points. One, God, the creator of the universe, is to be worshipped. Two, he governs the world by his providence. Humans, three, can glorify God by loving his children. Four, the soul of humans is immortal. And five, in the next life, the soul of humans will be judged by his conduct in the world. This formulation, or something closely resembling it, seems to have commanded the widespread respect of the founding fathers. Samuel Adams, commenting on these points, said, "This group of basic beliefs, which constitutes the religion of America, is the religion of all mankind. Those like myself who ascribe to the VOC worldview believe that the fact that the American founding fathers were thinking not only of America, but all of mankind, is really significant. God's will is ultimately to unite all mankind into one family of God. I'd like to express the contrast and similarity between the founding fathers' universal religious code and the VOC worldview in a little more detail. To the founding fathers' article of faith, he governs the world by his providence, the VOC worldview adds that humans are created free so that they can love and take responsibility, thus emphasizing that humans must take part in God's providence by exerting his free will. The soul of man is immortal, and man lives an eternal life, of course, are identical in content. Finally, the founding fathers believed that the soul of man is judged by his conduct in the world. The fifth point of the VOC worldview, which states that selfless love is the supreme value, underlines the standards for the judgment of humans' earthly life and the main criterion for growth of the human spirit. When a human has successfully practiced a life of selfless love here on earth, his spirit will be free to commune with God and enjoy fellowship with all people in the eternal hereafter. The parallel between the VOC worldview and the above-mentioned points of faith by the founding fathers, it's not coincidental. Just as the founding fathers of America believed that religious life was going to be vital for the survival of America, so VOC sees it being crucial to the survival of the free world. And as the hope of the free world today lies in America, VOC urges America to return to its founding spirit. It is the fervent hope of the VOC worldview that these presentations will provide a new strength of religious zeal that each VOC podcast listener, whatever his or her views may be, will be inspired to a new energy of dedication to God and humankind. In VOC, there is truly hope. For the first time, it will be possible to reverse the tide of the deadly struggle between freedom and communist tyranny. For the first time, there can be hope for America and the world. This VOC counterproposal brings a new day of hope for all. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters.
Welcome back. This is the news section of the podcast where I examine a current topic related to communist ideology. For this episode, my topic is Chinese communism. It's early June, so I'm going to discuss the continuing efforts by the Chinese Communist Party to hide the heinous crime carried out 34 years ago in Beijing Square, known as Tiananmen. For the days leading up to June 4, 1989, thousands of Chinese had camped out in the central square with one goal in mind: to demand that the Chinese Communist Party adopt democratic political reform. The freedom that brought down the Berlin Wall months before had inspired many of them. The pro-democracy protesters, again, many were students, erected a statue modeled after the Statue of Liberty. The 30-foot statue was constructed over 4 days out of foam and papier-mâché over a metal armature and was unveiled and erected on Tiananmen Square on May 30, 1989. The statue was called the Goddess of Democracy and became an instant icon of liberty and a symbol of free speech and democracy movements. The statue was destroyed by forces of the People's Liberation Army that launched a massive assault on unarmed protesters in the square on the evening of June 4th. The bloody crackdown spawned an entire generation of Chinese who continue to fight for freedom in China and against the hated Communist Party of China. China launched an unprecedented ideological crackdown to stamp out every reference to Western-style democracy after the protests. And that's viewed by Chinese leaders as an existential threat to Communist Party rule. The ideological campaign continues to this day against any mention of what the Chinese call the June 4th movement. On June 2nd this year, a dissident online publication, China Digital Times, revealed just how Chinese censors continue to fear their crimes of 1989 will be exposed or remembered. The outlet published a leaked censorship instruction by ByteDance, the Chinese company that owns the popular video sharing app TikTok. A similar ByteDance application in China, known as Douyin, received instructions on June 2nd that were disclosed to China Digital Times. The instructions state that for June 3rd, 4th, and 5th, all official accounts are forbidden from posting content, and all key opinion leaders are banned from posting brand-related advertising content. The restrictions were to end on Tuesday, June 6th. Under this section of security precautions, the notice said, all those running official accounts must pay close attention to trends in the comment sections of old posts. Comments and reposts are forbidden from displaying content that includes but not limited to lit candle emojis, numbers with unclear implications, slogans, tanks, old photos with a throwback feel, Jackie Chan, Alan Tam, Eric Zhang, Anita Mui, and other Hong Kong artists or photographs of large crowds, Victoria Harbor, Tiananmen, the Summer Palace, candlelight, objects lined up in a row, among other content. When necessary, please temporarily close the comment section until the day the restrictions are lifted. Note the number of retweets, comments, or likes on official account content should never be a sensitive number. When necessary, please rectify in a timely manner. So ends this leaked directive on censorship. There are few clearer lists of Tiananmen taboos than the forbidden content that was just mentioned in that leaked memo. Lit candle emojis are a universal online expression of grief and a favorite expression of remembrance in China. Numbers with clear implications is a reference to the vast numerology that has grown around avoiding 64, the month and day of the Tiananmen massacre. Those seeking to commemorate the anniversary sometimes use the euphemism May 35th. When 64 must be used, those inclined to comply with state censorship often use workarounds, a custom that has seemingly spread to Hong Kong. Advertisers who took out full-page ads congratulating the state-adjacent newspaper Mingpao on the 64th anniversary of its founding used the awkward formulation, "Congratulations on moving towards 65 years." That focus on numerology has extended to the number of likes, comments, and reposts of old posts, which authorities clearly fear could be used to reference the forbidden date. The banning of images of Victoria Harbor and lined-up objects are attempts to suppress the once popular tradition of placing miscellaneous objects in a row in reference to the iconic Tank Man photograph. That's the most famous of the parodies used, a giant yellow duck that once floated in Victoria Harbor. The run-up to the anniversary of the Tiananmen massacre often sees a broader tightening of political controls. For example, The Baidu map feature recently removed Sitong Bridge, which was the site of the 2022 protest against Xi Jinping and the Communist Party. They took that out. You can't search for that anymore. This spring, Hong Kong's government removed hundreds of books about Tiananmen and other topics from local libraries. With the passage of Hong Kong's strict national security law in 2020, the city's annual Tiananmen vigil ceased to exist, and its June 4th museum was forced to close, although it survives online. The recently opened June 4th Memorial Museum in New York City is now the only permanent physical exhibition in the world dedicated to preserving the memory of the 1989 Tiananmen pro-democracy protests and the bloody suppression that followed. A recent essay by China Media Project's David Bandersky, How a Massacre Shaped China's Media, reminds us of a time when Chinese press stood shoulder to shoulder with the students and other citizens demanding change. The essay notes that the May 18, 1989 edition of the People's Daily included a photo of People's Daily journalists marching and this caption, "On May 17th, a number of workers from this paper march in the streets expressing solidarity with the university students." The same People's Daily article contained this quote from a grassroots cadre in Beijing. "For the life of me, I can't figure out why they, the Chinese leaders, won't come out to see them. You can't just hide. You can hide from today, but you can't hide from tomorrow. The more you hide, the bigger the problem becomes." I learned from reading the 2001 book, The Tiananmen Papers, just how strong was support for democracy within the Communist Party itself at the time. The Tiananmen Papers refers to a collection of top-secret CCP documents that were smuggled out of China on the massacre. The stark revelation was that democracy in China was further along in 1989 than the world had suspected. The papers, which U.S. government officials judged to be authentic, reveal that the debate on political reform inside the ruling Politburo was fierce. One group, led by two top Communist Party leaders, Zhao Ziyang and Hu Qili, sounded like Russia's Boris Yeltsin calling for true democracy. The diehard Marxist-Leninists, led by Premier Li Peng, won out, but only after the Politburo deadlocked and was unable to vote on the use of force to oust the protesters from the square. The result? An illegal committee of party elders made the telephone call to the Chinese military to clear the square, proving that the People's Liberation Army could not get written orders to kill the students, only phone calls. This year, in the run-up to the June 4th anniversary, police in Hong Kong detained activists on the anniversary of the massacre and banned all public commemoration of the attacks. Thankfully, candlelight vigils took place in other cities worldwide to commemorate the thousands that lost their lives when the military attacked, firing automatic rifles and using tanks and armored vehicles to mercilessly run over protesters in the square. I'd like to note in closing the passage of a friend, Claudia Rosette, a Wall Street Journal reporter and tireless fighter for freedom. Claudia witnessed the attack and she died May 29th. She described it in a June 4th, 1989 dispatch. She said, "With this slaughter, China's communist government has uncloaked itself before the world. The Chinese themselves have known for decades that they are ruled by a party that will do anything, including impoverish and periodically butcher them to ensure its own survival. Since Deng Xiaoping took over in 1978, the hope has been that his economic reforms would bring a corresponding measure of political freedom. The showdown these past 6 weeks between China's people and its institutionalized tyrants shows that Mr. Deng and his fellow party leaders prefer a China that is poor and under their totalitarian sway to one that is rich and free. Let us never forget that this barbaric ideology will not wither away, but can only be defeated when it is confronted by truth. And that's my mission here at the VOC podcast. I'll be right back after a short break."
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz. featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
I spoke to you earlier about my book, Deceiving the Sky. I also wanted to urge you to take a look at another book that I wrote called iWAR, War and Peace in the Information Age. We live in an information age, and yet we're getting bombarded with enemy propaganda coming at us from all different directions. iWAR really helps expose what we need to do and how we need to counter it. I urge you to get a copy. The book can be found at iwarbook.com or at my website, thegertzfile.com.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I'm joined now by Matt Pottinger, former White House Deputy National Security Advisor and an expert on China. Currently, he's chairman of the China Program at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Matt, welcome to the program.
Bill, it's good to be with you.
You mentioned in recent testimony to the Congressional China Commission how China is reviving its Marxist-Leninist ideology under Xi Jinping. What do you see as the goal of this ideological revival?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, Xi Jinping is someone who really promotes political Marxism, right? Which you could call Marxism-Leninism, and so the goal of a Marxist-Leninist regime, first and foremost, is to stay in power. Mm-hmm. It is to maintain a monopoly on power, a monopoly by a single party, and really to have one person, as the core leader or dictator of that party. And so it is really an ideology of power. It's also an ideology that is hostile, of course, to capitalism. It believes, and Xi Jinping has spoken in some of his most important speeches. Some of those speeches were kept secret for years, but were disseminated throughout the Communist Party leadership, where he said that it's inevitable that socialism as practiced by the Chinese Communist Party. Remember, this isn't the Scandinavian model, right? This is a single party dictatorship with a core leader at the top of it, and it's an increasingly totalitarian model. That model will inevitably dominate the globe, and that capitalism will inevitably perish. It will vanish or be forced to vanish from the scene.
Yeah, and you made the really good point in the testimony that they use terms like reform and opening up for external consumption, but internally they have an aggressive program to promote Marxism-Leninism with Chinese characteristics for the new era, as they call it, within China for the Communist Party. They want to get that going for the party, the 94 million party members. They also wanted to get the military on board with that too as well. Xi Jinping has also used this term historical nihilism. Now, it seems to have been in the context of the failure of the Soviet Union, which is a driving factor in regime survival in China. What can you explain a little bit about how the Chinese view this concept of historical nihilism?
Yeah, one of the really key speeches that Xi Jinping gave, also a secret speech, but one that we were fortunate to have access to after it was leaked, key parts of it were leaked. This was his first major address, really. It was late 2012. He hadn't even become president yet, but he had the more important title. He just acquired the more important title of the head of the party, of the Communist Party. And he gave a speech about the collapse of the Soviet Union and really as a lessons learned kind of speech. He talked about this idea that, I'll read you a quote from it. He said, "Why did the Soviet Union disintegrate? Why did the Soviet Communist Party collapse? An important reason was that their ideals and beliefs had been shaken. It's a profound lesson for us to dismiss the history of the Soviet Union and the Soviet Communist Party, to dismiss Lenin and Stalin, and to dismiss everything else is to engage in historic nihilism, and it confuses our thoughts and undermines the party's organizations on all levels." So what nihilism is really criticizing the founders of the Communist Party, criticizing their policies, even when those policies have resulted in tens of millions of deaths, as occurred under Stalin, and tens of millions more that occurred under Mao Zedong. What she is saying is that it's verboten to dig up those failures and to criticize the predecessors. What I think he was doing was implicitly criticizing Nikita Khrushchev. So, I mean, we in the West, we think of Khrushchev as this hardliner. Remember, I mean, he was the one who showed up at the UN and started banging his shoe on the table and saying, "We will bury the West." Xi Jinping thinks that he's a softy, Khrushchev. He thinks that he was a wimp because he deigned to criticize the record of his predecessors, Lenin and Stalin. And I think she thinks that that was really the original sin that set the Soviet communist system on a course towards oblivion. Now, in that speech, he's even more explicit. He doesn't talk about Khrushchev by name. He does talk about Mikhail Gorbachev, the mm-hmm. final leader of the Soviet communist system. He names him by name, and he's clearly the villain of the speech. He's the mm-hmm. villain of the parable.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It reminds me of a debate I did with Intelligence Squared probably 10 or 15 years ago in New York City. And one of the pro-China debaters, myself, Mike Pillsbury, and Mearsheimer. And this businessman, he said, "I've been doing business in China for 20 years and I've never met a communist." And I told him, I said, "Well, you need to go to the PLA Museum in Beijing," which I did on one of the trips I visited there back in the 90s with Secretary of Defense Bill Cohen. And in that museum, they have statues of all the communist founders, Marx, Engels, Lenin, even Stalin. So it's clear that they really internally they believe all this, but externally they definitely try to use deception to pretend that they're not really communists or not really Marxists.
Yeah, I mean, they still put up huge portraits of Marx, at key times, Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, time for just one more question. The Biden administration seems to be making a big mistake, and I've reported on this extensively in the Washington Times. Back in 2021, Wendy Sherman went to China and was given two lists of demands, one of things that the U.S. has to change and other cases of concerns. And at the top of the list, the Chinese demanded that the Biden administration not seek to undermine the communist system in China, which seems to me to be a big mistake. If we learned anything from the Cold War, it was Reagan that went after the Soviet Union ideologically as well as financially in other areas. We now seem to be in the midst of a kind of a new detente or an effort to accommodate Beijing on the part of the Biden administration over some questionable war fears. What's your view of this push for detente and re-engagement?
Yeah, I mean, Reagan's, one of his great contributions was that his recognition that detente was not working for the United States and for the West. And so he discarded it. He didn't end of diplomacy with the Soviets. I mean, he had very successful diplomacy in many respects, but his view was that you need to be frank, you need to be candid, and that candor in exposing the communist system for what it is, criticizing it, being self-critical about failings in, on our side as well, but recognizing that as a free society, you know, with basic liberal tenets and principles that we value, that is a far superior way for people to live, and a superior way for governments to serve the aspirations of people and to support the human spirit. And so he was very candid in his critiques of the Soviet system, and really discarded the détente system, which was really about trying to paper over those differences and pretend that the two systems were morally equivalent, which they're most certainly not. I think that we would be well served to have leaders who would call out the fact that China's committing genocide right now. I'm glad that the Biden administration sustained that verdict, which was made during the Trump administration, but they don't talk about it very much. We don't talk all that much about the moral bankruptcy of the system under China, or just how dark and totalitarian the vision is on, you know, using technology to suppress people, identify people by their race, and then put them into concentration camps. I mean, this is what's happening today in China. So détente is. I also worry about sliding into this more of a détente framework. It's not going to serve us well. It's not to say that we're promoting regime change. Actually, ironically, that regime change was the policy of our engagement policy of the 1990s and 2000s up until President Trump. What we thought we would do is evolve them into a democracy. Of course, that turned out to be fantasy. What we were really doing was strengthening the Chinese Communist Party and their military. So now we need to, we got to stop doing that.
Yeah, great. We've been talking with Matt Pottinger, former White House Deputy National Security Advisor and currently Chairman of the China Program at Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Matt, thanks so much for your time.
Bill, thanks for having me.
That's it for this episode of Victory Over Communism with Bill Gertz. Tune in again in a couple of weeks for a new podcast.
Thanks for listening to Victory Over Communism with award-winning national security journalist Bill Gertz, the only program in the free world unafraid to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how the Communist Party of China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. See you next time on Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.